Today on the Grave Talks, Haunted Ozark Hotel, a talk with Wesley Fox. It started as a dream of a structure to not only help those building a community, but also a place to stay for those who would eventually visit a beautiful plot of land in the Ozarks of Missouri. What would happen to this property over its life would be almost anything but expected. From becoming a nursing facility with a very dangerous reputation to a B&B that could never quite be completed because no one would come back to work. All the way to a possession. This is a story of a haunted hotel. A haunted Ozark hotel. We discuss the story with paranormal investigator Wesley Fox.
From everything I've ever understood and was able to find, you know, history was at first was like really hard to find unless you just happen to talk to that right person. But we were able to talk to some of the, I think it was, she was a nurse originally that worked at the building. Mm-hmm. She said back, the sign out front says 1 year. It's like 1920 something. I forgot right top of my head. But they said the building was actually built during the same time the power site dam was. Mm-hmm. Because that's what supposedly they housed the workers.
Sure.
And during that time, it was the Ozark Beach Hotel. And in the very, very beginning stages of that.
Wow.
But they said that the first floor was near the kitchen area, of course. Mm-hmm. Where they could get a meal, breakfast, lunch, dinner. And then also the second floor is where everyone was housed at, supposedly. And then the third floor was kind of like a brothel, you know. Mm-hmm. Self-explanatory there.
Sure.
So, but, you know, I've heard that that's not exactly true. I've heard that it was just, you know, the one floor for a while. So, I mean, you hear different things.
Yeah.
But I know by the 1920s, it did have its full three floors.
Okay.
Now, and it was still the Ozark Beach Hotel.
Now, at this time in the 1920s, what is life like there in Forsyth, Missouri?
Just like it was with the gangsters. The gangsters were running wild in the Forsyth area as well.
Okay.
Especially over on Rockaway Beach. That mm-hmm. was actually known for one of Al Capone's little hideouts.
Sure. So you have like the gangsters and everything running around there. Is that also kind of attracting the public and tourists and people, you know, just trying to get a little taste of the excitement of that time with, you know, just kind of life being kind of crazy in that area and kind of secluded?
Yeah, because, you know, during, I would say that time, you know, that place was more popular than Branson was.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And, which is kind of hard to believe that now. But, you know, even with the gangsters there at the hotel itself,
yeah,
you know, that place was kind of being ran by the gangsters.
Mm-hmm.
They had, you know, Al Capone stayed there. And no others, you know, off the top of my head that stayed there other than possibly oh my God, what's that guy's name? I can't think.
Dillinger.
There okay. You go.
Yeah.
But there's a possibility that he possibly stayed there, but you know, nothing proven there.
Yeah. They were both fans of having areas in their hideouts that were, you know, secluded somewhat, you know, but always, you know, somewhat close to somewhat of a civilization and somewhat of being able to be around people, you know, to a certain extent, not necessarily hiding out in the middle of a city, but their own kind of little areas like this. Up in Wisconsin, there was the same sort of spots, very similar to what he had in Missouri.
Oh, yeah. It would have been kind of perfect for him to kind of hide out and get away.
Mm-hmm. So walk me more through the history of this building. We have the kind of the gangster era shortly after it's built and is sitting there. And it's a large building. You know, it was an impressive structure of the time.
I believe it's 15,000 square foot.
Okay.
I do believe, you know, pretty good size.
Mm-hmm.
After I want to say the 1930s or 40s, somebody bought the building and it was converted into a kind of a hospital slash nursing home.
Okay.
You know, you hear both, but I think originally it was more of just a nursing home for a few years.
Okay.
And they would use, once again, the first floor would be the kitchen area and kind of where the staff had their different quarters and stuff. And then the second floor was kind of what they used mostly with the patients, where originally I think the third floor wasn't being used too much with that first group that come in.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was a second group that came in 5 to 10 years later. So now we're probably somewhere in the early 50s, the late 40s.
Mm-hmm.
They had, once again, it was more of a slash hospital at this point and kind of a psychiatric hospital because people was there that wasn't exactly in their right minds.
Okay.
And from what I've read and studied, the people that were there, the owners slash administration people were not very nice to the patients. They were really mean, nasty. They would just take them off into the showers there on the second floor. And I guess they just hose them off,
mm-hmm.
put them on back the other way. During that time, you know, they didn't watch their people, but they had a young 17, 16 year old girl that was sick and she kind of wandered out and fell off the balcony. Wow. Off the third floor balcony during that time period.
Did she die?
Yeah. She died within just a couple hours later.
Yeah.
And then you go there, then it was owned by I cannot think of names today, but the lady's name was Mary.
Okay.
She was a doctor. She was a local doctor. She was actually really a really good lady. You know, she was the type of doctor that, you know, if you didn't have the money to pay for it, she'd take a trade. You know, sure. You want to give her a chicken for her to check you out, whatever, that was fine.
Okay.
So it wasn't all about money. Her, it was all about helping people.
Mm-hmm.
And she studied more, you know, did more of the nursing home. When I actually got to interview her, one of her daughters, and she said that when they lived there, you know, her mom basically used, you know, the first floor as the office, just like, you know, everybody else did originally,
mm-hmm.
then the kitchen area and then the staffing. And then the second floor was used for, you know, their patients. And then when they had it, the third floor was where they slept at the time.
So it's like their personal house. They lived in the property. Okay.
Yeah. They lived at the property during that time period. It's not confirmed, but it's rumored that there was lots of babies that were birthed there.
Okay.
During that time. I don't know if that's true or not. It may have been, you know, the earlier people.
Mm-hmm.
But after, let me see, she left, I want to say, I think she had it all the way up into the 70s, maybe early 80s, until she retired. And then it became just a, you know, regular nursing home,
mm-hmm.
or supposed to have been. But the I interviewed a nurse that lived there, and she said, you know, they say it was a nursing home. She said, but let me tell you, she goes, there'd be times I'd pull into work and I would see some of these patients sitting on the porch trying to pull each other's toenails off with pliers.
Oh, God.
So they couldn't have been in their right minds.
Sure.
And during that time, I know they were starting to get some of the freaky stuff going on. It was during that time period.
Mm-hmm. And this would have been early 80s or so when
late 70s, early 80s. And I believe it stayed that business all the way up until the 90s when, once again, it was another nursing home. Then after that went out of business in the late and sometime in the 80s, 90s, because, you know, it was vacant there for a while too.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a, I know it was, I think it was during that time when one of the Branson showgirls that they called her, you know, she worked, you know, one of the shows there in Branson, she mm-hmm. bought it and she started to, you know, renovate it. And she actually got one room done and that was it. Then she sold and got out. So, never heard why, if she ran out of money or if something spooked her out.
Yeah.
What? Never really heard.
And her intent was to turn it into what, a bed and breakfast?
I believe so. Okay. I know the next business is when it actually became the historic, they called it the Historic Honeymoon. Well, mm-hmm. Yeah, I think they called it the Historic Honeymoon Hotel because it was, you know, bed and breakfast then.
Yeah.
They actually have weddings and all that stuff. And then from what I understand, they had some wedding planners that were running, you know, I guess working with the owners, but they were taking people's money to, you know, to plan these weddings. And then they just kind of disappeared with the money, left the owners with a lot of debt.
Uh-huh.
So the owners had to sell. And I know from that period, it stayed, you know, basically empty for years.
Mm-hmm.
It was empty when we started investigating it in 2015. I know a gentleman that owned it. He actually lived in Tulsa, and he had it on the market for, I think, a good 3 years before it sold.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it sold in the summer of 2016. And I know that's when they were supposed to be doing some renovations, and they had some break-ins where people broke in and tore up a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. And that happened after I was already in Ohio. But just as recently as May, me and Nikki went down there and to visit my son. And we decided, you know what, let's go drive by the bed and breakfast just for the heck of it.
Sure.
And we were out there, and now the place is actually just one big residence. They have it just as a house.
So someone is actually living in the property?
Yeah. From what we've seen, they're living in it just like, yeah, just regular residence. Because we started to walk up, and we was going to see if they were renting out rooms or
yeah
something. I mean, we would have rented one at a heartbeat.
Yeah.
But we just got right up to the little driveway there from across the from the park.
Uh-huh.
And you can see where this is a private residence. Stay out. Like, oh. So we just stepped right on back.
Wow. So, I mean, the location as far as the activity and things that have gone on there, it's amazing that someone's living in there. I mean, and we should paint the picture a little bit too, so people can kind of understand, you know, the state of Forsyth, Missouri. Again, it's a I guess you call it a suburb of Branson. You know, it's like a town, in my opinion, there that it obviously has seen better days. Once a very, I think, you know, thriving resort community. And with economic hardship and stuff, it's a shell of what it once was. But shell being the key word, many of the shells of what once was still line some of the streets. And there's remnants you can tell, like, this was a really happening place once. This was a really amazing town that a lot of people would flock to. But now it's not necessarily that. I mean, how would you describe it?
I don't know. I think the only thing that keeps Forsyth really going anymore is the fact that that's where the, you know, Taney County government offices is at.
Yeah.
You know, I know when I was doing the ghost tours there in Branson, people thought, you know, almost everybody thought, you know, Branson was the county seat in Taney County. I'd say, no, that's Forsyth.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, I mean, you can tell there's a McDonald's over there. And I
have to say,
that's about it.
It is the dirtiest, worst McDonald's I've ever been to in my entire life.
Yes.
I was never so inspired to leave a review about a McDonald's until I've been to that McDonald's, and I was horrified.
Yeah, it's pretty horrible.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's certainly a town that's seen better days. Obviously, you know, when you have communities like this that are falling on problems, there's a lot of drug problems there. There's all sorts of things that just, you know, rot away a town and eat away at the beauty that it once was. That's what I kind of find so fascinating about this hotel and just that area in general is, you know, just the urban decay of it. I mean, I hate to say that, but it's I love to see that while it's still there, because eventually these places will fall into utter disrepair or be torn down or fall down on themselves. Let's go back into the early 80s, where you said freaky things started to happen there. Things were starting to be talked about or reported. This was a time when it was a nursing home, and also as you said, a nurse said, it was likely also a mental health facility as well, judging by what some of the residents were doing and doing unsupervised. What were some of those reports initially that you came across?
The ones that I think the first ones I come across was people would, go by the building. And this might have been just during a little time when there's like nobody there. Maybe they were moving, just changing businesses or whatever. But they'd hear like, heavy furniture being dragged across the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it's kind of hard to do that if there's nobody there.
Sure.
Because they just innocent people going up to want to take pictures of the beautiful building.
Mm-hmm. And they're just curious about it, just trying to find out, what's...
Yeah, they get curious and they'd hear, stuff like that. But particularly when it was a nursing home, they started... One of the articles I ran across, one of the gentlemen that was writing the article said his father used to work there and he was a maintenance guy and he hated to go down to, I think it was the laundry area. And then he hated to go up on the third floor, period. Didn't want to go up there. He always felt like he was being watched. And then at one point he seen, I believe it was a spirit of a little kid or what he thought was a little kid.
Mm-hmm.
That just kind of walked out of one room and then to the other. During the same time period, another person reported seeing an elderly man kind of appear sitting on a bench.
Mm-hmm.
And of course you take that second step to look and it's gone. So there's lots of stuff like that. When it was the honeymoon, now the caretaker, she didn't like the place much. Once again, she wanted to get out of there before it got dark because the place got creepier.
Mm-hmm.
But she did not want to go up on the third floor. That third floor of that building is by far the worst floor. We definitely had experiences up there.
And I want to talk about your experiences, too. I just want to kind of cover what some of the reports were initially on the building.
I'm trying to do it in order as much as possible.
Sure.
And then, so I think from there, when other people bought the building, one particular time, I don't know if it was when the guy had it that lived in Tulsa or before that, but they were getting, workers to come in and restore it.
Mm-hmm.
And they went through workers like crazy because the workers refused to stay there. One in particular quit because he had his tools thrown at him. But he's like, I'm done. I guess they threw his whole tool bag kind of got thrown towards him. And he said, screw it. He's gone.
Mm-hmm.
But it was something like that happening with the workers all the time. And that's when they just refused to work there and they couldn't get anyone to do it.
So it really, it kind of started,
area, they ran out of workers.
I was going to say, so it kind of started to gain a reputation in town because this is not a big city by any means. And I mean, people don't realize how small Branson is either. But you only have so many contractors and such in the area that you would want to have work on anything. And once you get through that small group, what do you do?
You're in trouble. Well, see, then the place, after it gets this reputation and it's empty, the stupid teenagers get in there.
Sure.
They use it as a party place. And of course, that really helped tear up the building.
Mm-hmm.
But then they were doing stupid stuff. They were, playing with Ouija boards. They were doing seances. And it's said that some of them were doing we're doing satanic rituals in there as well. That I don't know for a fact.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that was one of the big rumors.
I mean, so this place goes through a lot in terms of its life from being housing for people, doing construction into the town and the infrastructure of the dams and the bridges to being a care facility, to being a hotel, to... being a party spot that all hell breaks loose on. When you went into the structure, what was the time frame on it? What was the state of the building at that moment?
We first went in there. we actually got lucky. We met a girl and her husband on a ghost tour, and they were like, hey, you know, we do paranormal. We actually have permission to go into this bed and breakfast over in Foresight. You know, mm-hmm. which one it is. I was like, yeah, I've heard of it. And we've been trying to find out who the owner is because we want to go. Mm-hmm. So we set it up where we all go. So our first time in there, I want to say it was like around the 20th or so of June of 2015.
Okay.
The main way we walked into the building was that there was a side door that comes off of Mount Vernon Street there. And that you're right on with that floor. You're on basically the second floor mm-hmm. already. So if you walk all the way through that, that's, you know, the second floor. It empties out into the second floor lobby. And then you have stairs that go down to the first floor. And then up and around to the side, you have, you know, stairs that go upstairs to the third floor.
Sure.
Or there's a hallway to your right, and you can just take it back to the laundry area and all that. But that whole first floor or second floor, that was actually in really good shape. I mean, it wouldn't have taken very much to get that area there going.
And the state of it was, what was the last type of business that it was when you were walking through it?
That would have been the Historic Honeymoon Hotel.
So it was the hotel version of its setting when you
right.
went through. Okay.
You can tell this was their, you know, their lobby area, their nice area, the, you know, where the rooms they probably rented at for sure was right there.
Okay.
As you go down to the first floor, and it's not in horrible shape. You still have, you know, you still have carpet. You can see some of the carpet was really nice back in its day, but, you know, it's seen its better days because mm-hmm. there were some spots from the party, and I'm sure. The walls were all intact. They were all pretty good shape. There was one bathroom on the other side by the kitchen there on that first floor. It was what they called the Branson Showgirl bathroom. That was the one room that she renovated. It had a huge jacuzzi in it with a wraparound mirror. Beautiful, beautiful. And the actual kitchen, that part you can tell, you know, it's seen its better days, but it wasn't horrible yet. But it still had the industrial stove, your industrial refrigerator, mm-hmm. you know, things like that. It was all still there. Now, when you get up to the third floor, that's when everything changes. That's when everything goes to shit. You get, you know, as soon as you come up the stairs, you can go, you know, right or left. Mm-hmm. But it don't matter which way you go because it's, you can pretty much see through all the walls because there is no walls. There's just mostly, through most of it, you see just the frame of a wall.
Okay.
To where, you know, they've started to redo it, but just never finished. And some of the walls where they had walls, there was some black mold in. So you had to really be careful. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how it was all the way through the third floor. There was some places in on the floor where the wood was a little rotted, mm-hmm. but it wasn't unsafe, if that makes any sense.
Sure.
So the third floor was by far the worst looking area, mm-hmm. for sure.
And this is also the floor where they were having issues with contractors and all of that, that really kind of put a halt, you know, allegedly to the renovation, you know, and the continued trying to rebuild this thing up into the Honeymoon Hotel and to make it bigger and better than it was initially because they couldn't get it done. Is that accurate?
Yes. Okay. I'm from what everything I was told, that's exactly where they had the issues at.
Okay.
Because, of course, that was the area that we were like, oh, we want to check that part out.
Sure. So
it's supposed to be bad. Let's see if we can check it out.
So I want to hear, I want to go back to the third floor in a moment, but I want to ask this. As you walked into the building, you had obviously heard, you know, some rumors and this and that and bits and pieces over time just from being there. What did it feel like just walking into the building initially? It just, you know, was there any negativity? Was it neutral? Was it positive? Was it just curiousness? What were you and the folks you were with feeling just walking through the doors initially there on that second floor?
Well, for me, I mean, like I've always told you, I've never really felt anything.
Yeah.
So, but Melissa, which I'll actually mention her name now. Mm-hmm. because we're all on good. You know what I mean?
Sure.
But, you know, and she's talked about it recently too, because I'm actually trying to write this book. But the way that place, it's kind of hard to explain. Like when we would walk, when we first got there, you know, it wasn't too bad, but almost immediately before she got out of the car, she was getting sick.
Okay.
You know, and we parked up on the hill a little bit there on Mount Vernon Street and walked down. And of course, the closer we got to the place, the worse she felt.
Yeah.
The second floor, she didn't mind too much. You know, her gifts, you know, she was psychic. She could feel things, mm-hmm. see things. You know, she was a real good psychic.
Yeah.
I didn't have no complaints about that for sure. But it's like down in the, I want to say when we went down to, it would have been the kitchen area, walking by the kitchen, going into the showgirl room. She did not like that room. And then she said the kitchen, there was always something, almost always from what she was saying, there was, you know, several times she had seen a dark shadow, mm-hmm. dark figure in the doorway of the kitchen. So she was not happy about being in the first floor. But the whole third floor, she said that it always made her feel, she said the only way to describe it was like a funhouse effect. Mm-hmm. How, you know, everything's not what it seems. She goes, almost like your equilibrium is off up there for mm-hmm. her. And that place, she said, that was where she got the darkest feelings. And then, you know, for myself, if there was one area that I thought was spooky, it would have been that third floor for sure.
So what, tell me more about what you experienced up there on the third floor and what were, you know, what sort of, you know, as you walked out of that and the experiences that you had while investigating, what were some of the things that you came across?
Well, the bed and breakfast itself, it's hard to explain in a roundabout way because, you know, you could go one day and, you know, you don't really get nothing. You might get a knock. You might get one little noise or something, nothing major. Then you could go the next night and then all hell's breaking loose. So you're getting growls and, you know, someone's getting scratched. Mm-hmm. You know, you didn't know what you were going to get from one day to the next. You know, so that first investigation, you know, wasn't too bad other than some stomach pains that Melissa was having. Mm-hmm. You know, physical wise, she had those creepy feelings. But the next night, or it was like a week later, we went and something she noticed is that there wasn't even no bugs out. You know how you hear, you go outside, you hear the nighttime noises.
Sure.
You go out. When we went that time, it was dead silent. There was nothing. And we go, and then within, I would say we were there for maybe 30 minutes. And she's like, Wesley, we got to go. We got to get the hell out of here right now. She said, it's not just, you know, a demon here. She goes, it's a devil. And then what her and I, it always, you know, discussed about demons, devils, that is kind of like with your angels, you know, you have your hierarchy, you have angels, archangels, and then Jesus and God, mm-hmm. where you have demons, devils, and then the devil, Lucifer. So that's kind of what she was meaning, that we have, you know, a pretty powerful demon going to come and basically whip our butts if we didn't hurry up and get out of there, which, so, you know,
What occurred to her to make that statement to you that there is a devil here?
I want to say one of the things that happened is she was pushed by something as she was trying to walk down the stairs. That happened, but then she seen the dark hooded figure plus what do they call it? Basically, hellhound.
Okay.
They're on the third floor. And then just the different visions she was getting was what was telling her what was going on. Mm-hmm. I personally was like, okay, let's go. Because, you know, during that time period in my life, I was very egotistical. I was an asshole.
Okay.
But, you know, we had a lot of a lot of success when it comes to that kind of stuff. So, I mean, I wasn't really worried about it. But she's like, no, you know, you don't understand. We are not prepared. We don't have the stuff we need in order to get rid of this, do what we need to do. So I finally was like, okay, fine. You know, we'll go. So we left and we would go back and forth for, I would say the next 6 months, we'd go back and forth up there. 5 months, because on December 5th is when things got bad. Melissa stayed home. My good buddy, Tim Hibden, he had come up from Iowa just to visit, you know, to investigate like we normally did. And he brought his niece. She was 18 years old. She had just turned 18. She had been on some investigations with us, but, you know, nothing too horrible. So we got the bright idea, hey, let's take her out to the bed and breakfast. So it was me and Tim, Kenzie, and then my two boys, and Melissa's son, Aaron. Once we got to the bed and breakfast, you know, me and my two boys, we went up to the third floor, and Tim, Aaron, and Kenzie went down to the first floor. Mm-hmm. We wasn't in there, I want to say, 10 minutes, and we heard Kenzie scream real loud. So I hurried up, got on the radio, and said, hey, what was that, Tim? And he said, she just seen a dark shadow, and it scared the hell out of her. So we go downstairs, we meet him down there. And we're down there looking around for a few more minutes, and then we go up to the second floor and decide to step outside on the balcony just to get some fresh air. It's getting late, so, you know, we're like, okay, you know, before we go, let's go ahead and take her onto the third floor. As we're, you know, going back in there, walking up the third floor, me and Tim look at each other with that, oh, God, here we go. Mm-hmm. Let's get it over with, you know, because it's just kind of, I don't know, a really strong, a dark feeling. I mean, even I was feeling it then. It was just like, I did not want you there.
Yeah.
So we decide, you know, let's go ahead. As we get onto we just take that step up onto the floor. Like Kenzie, she like screamed, and then I really couldn't see her face at the time, but it looked like she tried to throw herself down the stairs.
That wraps up the first part of our conversation with Wesley Fox about this haunted Ozark Hotel. In part two, what happened when Wes and his friend Tim went to investigate the bed and breakfast with their kids? And how did Wes and Tim then break the possession of a child? And did Wes end up taking revenge on the spirit that traumatized his friends and family? We'll talk about all that and more in part two of our conversation. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.
Here's what happened when one journalist reported on DEI programs.
I decided to just focus on the University of Michigan. I obtained internal documents that showed that the school had spent about $250 million on DEI programs. I spent 2 weeks in Ann Arbor talking to everybody I could find. The unintended consequences of these programs, they had sort of left everybody dissatisfied. And this expensive machinery the school had built just imploded. If you're a journalist, you are not on anyone's team. All you're trying to do is figure out as many of the facts as you can gather. The facts are going to guide you to where the story lands. You're not taking sides. I'm Nick Confessori. I'm an investigations reporter for the New York Times.
Journalists like Nick follow the facts wherever they lead. They go where news breaks, get answers firsthand, and publish what they find. That's fact-based reporting. Seek it out if you don't already.
Despiértate, que el $4 breakfast meal deal ha llegado a McDonald's. Incluye un sausage McMuffin o sausage biscuit, hash brown y un café caliente. Llévate más por tu dinero con tu meal deal. Solo por tiempo limitado. Precios y participación pueden variar. Precios con entrega pueden ser más altos.